Hey, welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
And I'm Eric Pleiss, filling in this week for Lou, son of a gun, Olson.
Eric is actually a guest for the show this week, and he writes... Well, you did write for Puckett's Pond at one point, correct? Or
yeah, I used to write for Puckett's Pond. Now, I guess I'm kind of... My primary Twins baseball home is knuckleballsblog.com. But I also write with my twin brother, Paul, at baseballtwins.com. I do three times a month at bigleaguesmagazine.com. And then I do fantasy writing over at fantasybaseballcrackerjacks.com. And I host the excellent Twins podcast, Talk to Contact. So I'm basically an internet superstar, and I'm here to make Brew Crew Online the hottest thing since Ketchum.
And how's Talk to Contact going? Because, you know, you guys are almost at, what, 40 episodes? I mean, it's really catching on.
Yeah, we're at episode 39 is coming up this week, but we had a really great week a couple weeks ago. We had Jason Parks on the podcast to talk about Twins prospects. He gave glowing reports about Byron Buxton and Miguel Sano, and, you know, so that was exciting to hear. He talked a little bit about pitching, you know. So, I mean, it's a great podcast. We talk baseball. We do the Twins. We go around the league a little bit. And then we usually end the show by talking about what kind of beer we're drinking. So it's a fun time. I'm joined on that podcast usually by my twin brother, Paul. But for the past 6 or 8 weeks, we've had Cody Christie, the Nodak Twins fan from NodakTwinsFan.com. He's been filling in while my brother's out to sea, and so we're really happy to have Cody on the podcast with us. He does a great job, and we'll probably just keep him on even when Paul comes back from his military service.
You know, and that's, you know, something that really helps get out the word to other podcasts, is bringing in all these other people. And, you know, fortunately for you guys, it's really worked out. So, you know, congrats on that. And it's hard when you talk about teams, and it's kind of funny, you know, like the Twins and the Brewers, who... Honestly, this year have been really comparative, you know, don't have 20 wins yet. The pitching's been really awful for both teams. And really, it's just where, at least for the Twins, you know, they had... Okay, is it fair of me to say that with the guys they signed in the offseason, like Kevin Correa, Mike Pelfrey, and even Vance Worley, is it fair of me to say that there are at least some higher expectations for Twins pitching this year?
I would say no. I mean, granted, they're bringing in new faces, but you have to understand how bad the Twins' pitching was this year. And so in the offseason, the expectations were that the Twins would at least go out and get a legitimate number two starter, just get someone that could really anchor this staff to go along with Scott Diamond so that they would have at least two quality pitchers at the front of the rotation. And instead, what they got is a guy trying to come back from Tommy John surgery in 11 months in Mike Pelfrey. We saw him really struggle at the front end of the season here. Maybe he's been starting to put it together a little bit, pick up his strikeouts, get some of his control back. But he's still not the same Mike Pelfrey that he was 2 years ago for the Mets. So he's kind of been a disappointment, and we didn't expect a lot from him, you know, coming off of that surgery. Kevin Correa, I think, was roundly criticized as being one of the worst offseason deals in all of baseball. 2 years, $10 million for a guy who is probably a marginal fifth starter in the National League, then coming over to the American League where he has to face the DH. And you've seen not only has his strikeout rate gone from terrible to the worst in all of baseball, I think he's like 3.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, just absolutely terrible. Pitched well when the weather was cold, but now that's warming up, and he, you know, it seems like every year he pitches kind of well at the beginning, but now he's turning back into a pumpkin. His ERA, once again, is approaching 4. I wouldn't be surprised if it's closer to 5 by the time we get to the All-Star break. And Vance Worley has just been a disaster. You know, he was kind of a pretty decent young pitcher for the Phillies there for 3 years. And then this past 2012, he had an elbow cleanup, had like some bone chips or bone spurs or something like that, and so didn't pitch a full year in 2012. What I was thinking that was maybe his poor performance in 2012 was largely related to that injury and to that elbow cleanup that he had. But he's come back this year, and he's basically been terrible. So far this year, you know, I think he has like a 7 ERA. I'm looking at it right now, 7.21. He's 1-5. The one game that he did win, it seemed like he had finally turned it around, but then he went out this past week and he just threw another clunker, and the Twins rewarded him for his efforts with a one-way ticket to Class AAA Rochester. And so Vance Worley will be chumming it up along with the likes of Nick Blackburn in the minor leagues. And so, I mean, I don't know that there was a lot of high expectations. Sure, we thought Worley would be better, but we thought Correa would be bad. We thought Pelfrey would be bad. You know, so we maybe thought Gibson would be up sooner, but he kind of stunk it up in spring training. So really, anything we could have gotten from the Twins pitching staff would have been a bonus. They started out the year pretty good with Correa on a hot streak, but ever since really the first 4 weeks of the season, it's just been rapidly downhill, and Twins have lost 8 straight. Now, having said all of that, as bad as the Twins pitching has been, what the heck is going on in Milwaukee?
Well, you know, the Brewers, it was really a really strange thing in the offseason, because obviously halfway through the season, they got rid of Zach Greinke. He's not coming back. Sean Markham was really kind of on the, you know, outside looking in, because, you know, with shoulder problems, he was on the DL, and he was just going to be way too much to bring back. He at least went in $10 million, which the Brewers were not going to pay for a 370, you know, ERA pitcher. So they had to really go with a lot of people that they knew probably weren't ready as starters. I mean, they've had to go with Marco Estrada, who hasn't had much time as a starter, and he's done okay. He's been really good on the strikeouts, but any other times he's been really back and forth. He'll give up maybe 2 runs and then maybe 6. They had to go with Willie Peralta, who made his major league debut, I believe, last September, only pitched in about 4 or 5 games, did well, but has been absolutely crushed this season. ERA of 6.45. He just pitched last night against the Dodgers. Gave up 6 runs, 4 earned, didn't even get out of the second inning. Kyle Loesch has been interesting because, you know, he was a name that was associated with the Brewers in the offseason, but they didn't know that, you know, they were going to actually sign him, and Marco Antanasio and Doug Melvin went after him. And it's just, a lot of people thought, well, it's not going to change the team in a whole if you bring in one guy, because they were looking at Ryan Dempster, I believe, back in November to bring him in, and they were very close, but Melvin didn't want to give a pitcher 3 years, and that's what Ryan Dempster wanted, and that's what they ultimately gave to Kyle Loesch. And really, the fifth man spot's been such a toss-up. They've had Mike Fiers in there, who's actually pitching Saturday in favor of Kyle Loesch, because Loesch is taking a few days off due to an elbow problem. And the rookie Hiram Burgos, who just made his debut this season. He pitched with Team Puerto Rico back in the World Baseball Classic in March. But starting pitching has been a real train wreck for this team. Honestly, the bullpen hasn't been that bad. John Axford's had a lot of problems, and we've talked about that before on this show, and really throughout the entirety of reviewing the Brew on the website. We talk about it a lot. It's been really, you know, painstakingly bad for Axford.
Do you think Axford has really been bad this year, or has he just been unlucky?
Well, I like to say he's a victim of circumstance sometimes, because he'll throw that one pitch over the middle of the plate and it'll get crushed, and he'll usually give up just one run. I mean, he's had outings where he's been giving up, you know, multiple runs, 3-4 runs a game sometimes. And, you know, I don't think Axford's bad at all. He can definitely rebound to where he was. We saw that last year out of him. He stunk it up in the middle of the season and then ended up getting 15 saves in a row. You know, I don't get why Ron Manicki decides to place him in games at certain times when he does. I think that Axford needs a little more time to try and get back to the, you know, building up his confidence. But I just think for the time being, you know, Jim Henderson's done a fine job as the closer, 9 saves on the season. And really, other than Axford's blunders, which I don't really think are really him, I think it's more of a mental battle that he's going through, the bullpen's actually been really solid. And they do have Tom Gorzolani coming back off the DL, and Chris Narvison coming back soon, so they have something to play with there. And I'm assuming at one point Hiram Burgos or Willie Peralta, or maybe both, will be sent down in favor of both Narvison and Gorzolani. So really, I mean, that's something that both that the Twins and the Brewers have had problems with really is their starting pitching. And going back to the Twins, I just want to ask real quick, is there a chance that, you know, the Twins see at some point, if it just does not pan out at all? I mean, Scott Niemann was supposed to be the guy to go to. Is it possible at all that we see Anthony Swarzak and even Liam Hendricks come back into the rotation at all?
There's probably no chance that Swarzak is anything other than a spot starter here or there, and I don't even think that he'll get a lot of spot starts this year because the Twins really have about 15,000 number five type pitchers between their major league roster and the guys that got stashed at AAA, guys like Cole DeVries, Sam Deduno, who's going to come up and pitch for them this week, Pedro Hernandez, who they just sent down, P.J. Walters, he's a guy at AAA who's not on the Twins' 40-man roster but pitched for him last year. So they have all kinds of guys who they can call up and pitch in that fifth spot or spot start if they need it. And I think they've really liked Swarzak in that long relief. I was talking on the podcast last week that Swarzak had really done a good job this year to kind of build some confidence in his abilities. The Twins have been getting a lot of short starts from their starting pitching, and Swarzak has come in and been able to not just maintain mop-up duty, but pitch pretty well. Then he went out and had a clunker earlier this week, but I still think, you know, one bad outing doesn't necessarily mean he's going downhill for a reliever. And so his ERA is up close to 4, but it should continue to come down if he pitches well here for the next couple of weeks. And I think they really like him in that swingman spot. So I don't think he'll pitch. Liam Hendricks is an interesting case. He's a guy who's really, in the past, up until this year, has dominated AAA, just had great stuff down there. And his big problem at the major league level is that, I guess it's the big thing about control versus command. He's able to throw strikes, but he's not necessarily able to throw strikes within the zone where he wants them. And so that leads to him leaving a lot more balls over the fat part of the plate, and he gives up a lot of home runs. So, I mean, that's been his biggest problem going back the last couple of years. This year in Rochester, he went back down when the Twins sent him down and hadn't pitched well, but he ended up on the DL there with some discomfort in his elbow. So we'll have to wait and see what's going on with him. We're not for sure what's happening there, but maybe he's dealing with some type of injury, and that's been causing his poor performance. But I don't know. Will he come back? Maybe, sure, probably. The Twins aren't going to do anything this year. They're in the midst of an 8-game losing streak. They have plenty of options. You know, they'll cycle through everybody and their brother to get them up here and really this year get a look at guys because they're looking to build this team for not really 2013, maybe not even 2014, but 2015, 16, 17. When some of those young core of players are coming up to the major leagues, and they're going to have a lot more money to spend on the pitching players to bring in free agents because they have a pretty good, decent group of core position players. They might need to pick up a shortstop or a middle infielder here and then maybe dump some money into the pitching staff, but really they're looking for guys that can round out the back of that staff and be members of this team 3 years from now.
You know, and the Twins are really an interesting case of a team because this is a team that, you know, 4 years ago was fighting in the playoffs against, you know, some of the better teams in the AL, like the Yankees.
Well, fighting in the playoffs is not something the Twins have done for the better part of a decade, but they've been in the playoffs.
So how does a team necessarily just go from that to being, you know, fighting the Royals to not being last place in the AL Central? What happened, really, with the Twins?
Well, I think you saw in 2010, they were the typical Twins that kind of sneak into the playoffs at the end of the year. 2011 was an injury year. You know, the Twins lost Mauer for a significant part of the year with that bilateral leg weakness deal going on. Then they had just Denard Span was injured. Justin Morneau never really came back from that concussion quickly. And so it was just a year. Just seemed like they could never really get healthy. Their pitching staff didn't perform well. And so 2011 was really just a lost year. I think even going into 2012, remembering thinking, okay, this team is healthy. They're going to perform well. They're going to get back up there. You know, 2011 was just a fluke. And then last year what we saw is that the Twins pitching just basically fell off the map. All of a sudden guys that they were counting on weren't getting better. They were getting worse. They were, you know, this extreme pitch to contact staff. They're not getting strikeouts. They're not able to get guys out. I mean, Francisco Liriano was supposed to be a guy who could really come back for them and get it going. He was even in one of those even odd year type of guys, and the last year was an even year, and he really never put it together. And the Twins ended up trading him to the White Sox. But I don't know. It just, it seems like two years to fall so fast is a lot. But really, if you think about in the AL Central, there wasn't a lot of great teams, so the Twins were poaching some wins. Then in 2011, they had injuries. 2012, they had pitching. So really, it's part of a three-year decline. And right now, the Twins didn't really add anything to their team this winter to make them any better than last year. Really, they're just maintaining from a team that lost almost 100 games a year ago. And I really think that while the front office hasn't said it, they're definitely looking to win in the future instead of win now. And so a bad team right now maybe just gets them a couple of extra slots higher in next June's draft.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that really was surprising to a lot of people because the Twins, you know, they had the heydays with Francisco Liriano and guys like that, and then they just come into this team that really has fallen on their face pitching-wise. And it kind of looks comparative to what's happening in Milwaukee a little bit because they just have a mix of one veteran starter, and a bunch of guys who have never really started before. I mean, you throw Giovanni Gallardo in there, and that's something. But the Brewers sort of, I hope, aren't going down that same path to where they're just going to be fighting the Cubs for fourth. But, you know, I guess I can say I get it. You know, it happens. But it's just one of those things that it really shows you how fast a team can just fall down. And a lot of it, you know, like you said, is through injury. And those are things you just can't help half the time.
Well, and I think here's the thing that I was looking at with the Brewers, which is just unbelievable to me how bad they are right now with the offensive core that they have in place. And, I mean, if you look at the eight guys they run out there on a regular basis, Lucroy, Betancourt, Weeks, Segura, Ramirez, Braun, Gomez, and Aoki, five of those eight players have an OPS plus of 130 or better. You know, so I mean, that's five players in their everyday lineup who are 30% better than the league. You know, I mean, there's tons of power in there. There's high on base percentages. There's guys who have good batting average and just, you know, hit singles, you know, and they're really struggling. You know, Lucroy is having a pretty bad season. I don't think he'll hit 226 the rest of the way. But when your primary first baseman is Yunesky Betancourt, that's definitely a problem. Injuries are definitely playing a thing there. And Corey Hart coming back probably, what, you think he'll be back in the middle of June? Is that realistic?
Yeah, that's what he was saying, because a lot of people thought he could be back by the end of May, which he's eligible to come off the 60-day DL. But realistically, Hart said himself, he's not coming back until probably mid-June.
Yeah, so if he's back in mid-June, that makes you a better second-half club. Ricky Weeks is just a disaster of himself right now. But still, you have five guys in your everyday lineup who are just mashing the ball. And despite all of that, the pitching is just really, really letting you down out of your everyday starters. Only Kyle Loesch has an ERA plus that's better than 100, and he's just barely better than average. I mean, Gallardo has been a disappointment. Peralta, like you mentioned, has been bad. Estrada. I mean, just there's nothing there. It's just amazing to me that your offense could be so good that you just can't string together enough, even consistent, maybe give up four runs in a start type pitches, and you're going to win a couple of games. There has to be something. There has to be, this team can't have this bad of pitching. It has to get better. Maybe it regresses to the mean and they, you know, are suddenly a 500 ball club going forward. But I just don't think that they're, you know, going to be eight games below 500 at the end of the year.
You know, and I draw this to two teams in particular that I think of that have really good offenses and very suspect pitching. one being the Colorado Rockies, who for the past 2-3 years have absolutely destroyed the cover off the ball. I mean, you have a lineup with Tulowitzki, Cargo, Todd Helton, and then you add in Willian Rosario, Jordan Pacheco, and then Josh Rutledge, alongside Dexter Fowler and even Tyler Colvin. I know he's in AAA right now when you bring him up. I mean, that's a team that absolutely destroys the ball, but their pitching has been awful. But then you look at the Texas Rangers, who have a very high-powered offense, even without Josh Hamilton. But their pitching somehow gets it done. Obviously, Yu Darvish was a huge thing for them. Derek Holland's been very good. They lost Matt Harrison. But, I mean, in previous years, the Rangers were the team that would give up 4 runs but still win a game because their high-powered offense. The Brewers are somewhere in that middle, slipping more towards the side of the Rockies this season. But even the Rockies have figured out because I think they're in a 3-way tie in for first in the NL West. So, I mean, it's very comparative to that, what the Brewers are slipping into now. But it's something that I don't think will last with this team. Obviously, I think at some point Guerrero's going to get it rolling. Estrada's going to get it rolling. Loesch, I'm hoping well, considering he had a really good season in 2011 and in 2012. But guys like Willy Peralta, Hiram Burgos, Mike Fiers, I'm very suspect about because they haven't had a lot of time to start. And Fiers is a very good example of inconsistency. Because if you look at him last year, he did amazing. He was lights out. He almost threw a perfect game, I think, against the Reds. He had 6 perfect innings against the Reds. And then after that start, I think from mid-August on, he could not pitch. He was giving up 5-6 runs a game, completely forgot how to pitch. And that's kind of what we were seeing out of him this year before they demoted him to AAA, and then now he's back up with the team. But, no, you're absolutely right. You know, the Brewers can destroy the ball, but they just can't win because their pitching gives up so many runs. And it's just, at some point, you have to wonder, when is this going to stop? Because, you know, looking where they rank across the board, 26th in ERA, 21st in quality starts, 26th in WHIP, 28th in opponent's batting average. And it's just, those aren't the type of numbers that are going to get you into a possible even wild card race.
Are you still holding out wild card hope for this Brewer team? I mean, do you think they can turn it around that much in the last 3 quarters of the season here? Or do you think they've already basically played so bad in the early going here that they're out of it, even in a weaker AL or NL Central?
I think there's definitely hope for them because you look at 2011 when they made that run into the playoffs and ended up losing into the Cardinals. They started off really bad that year. So, you know, yeah, I definitely think they have the potential to do it. It's just a matter of whether or not it can happen. Because you look at last year, from the beginning of the season to the All-Star break, they were very mediocre. From the All-Star break till the end of the season, they were the best team in baseball. And they were like 3 games shy of getting into the playoffs through the wild card. So I definitely think this team has the potential to do that. It's just, can they piece it all together? Because last year the problem was the bullpen. The starting pitching was decent. The offense was still great, but then again, this is a starting rotation that had Greinke for a while, had Markham for a while, and now this is a starting rotation that really the only two veteran presence are Loesch and Gallardo, and I really hesitate to call Gallardo a veteran presence, considering he's only had 5-6 years experience, whereas Loesch has had 12. I believe it's 12 or 13, somewhere along those lines. But no, I definitely think the Brewers can do it. It's just, are they going to? So.
Yeah, that's a no. Just a no. Resounding. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to give you an opportunity here. I want you to just sing me the praises of Carlos Gomez.
Because I know how much you love him.
Yeah, he's basically my favorite person to hate.
Carlos Gomez is, for really a lack of a better term, at least in 2013 standards, has been flat out amazing. You look at last year, he stole 37 bases. He's really deadly on the bases. Really good contact hitter, tremendous center fielder. He didn't really do those kind of numbers really with the Twins and with the Mets, but since he's been in Milwaukee, it's been pretty incredible. I mean, he took over the job really last year when Schneider Morgan kind of fell off. And I think he's really retained that. The Brewers signed him for 3 years, I believe, 20-some million. I mean, they signed him for cheap. So Carlos Gomez really has been a pleasant surprise for the Brewers. I forget who it was said he has 30-100 potential, which I don't really necessarily agree with. He has power, but I don't know that that's 30-100. He definitely has 30-30 potential, because he does have quite an amount of power with speed, and that's always nice to have. But, you know, he's obviously not one of the premier center fielders in the game, but he's definitely up in probably top 10, I'd have to say. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Brewers fan. I'm saying that because I think he's vastly underrated for the work he kind of does. You know, you really can plug him anywhere in the lineup, and he's going to do fine. And that's really the great thing, honestly, about the Milwaukee lineup, is they're so versatile. You can place anybody in that lineup anywhere, and they're going to do fine. And Carlos Gomez is one of the best examples of that, really. So with that said,
he's having a fantastic season. I mean, aided not in no small part by a .405 batting average on balls in play. You know, I think the line he put up last year, 260, 305, 463, is probably pretty close to what his true talent is these days. So that 325 batting average, I think, is going to fall back to earth once that batting average on balls in play starts to come back closer to his 300 career norm. Where, I mean, that's 100 points better than his norm right now. So, he just lights out baseball. But it's almost, there's just such a big shift from what he was in 2010, where he really didn't have any power. Then all of a sudden in 2011, he started putting it together. In 2012, as a full-time player, you know, all of a sudden 19 home runs, just really almost out of nowhere. I mean, what have you seen as someone who watches the Brewers every day? And I'm admittedly, I'm blacked out of the Brewers on MLB TV, so I get all my Brewers action courtesy of Bob Uecker. So I don't see a lot of games. I listen to a lot of games. Have you seen a big change in what he's doing at the plate? I mean, his walk rates are very similar. His strikeout rates are very similar. It's just like maybe he hit the gym one summer and added a bunch of bulk. I mean, it's not like he's a radically different player.
No, he's not really changing much from what we're used to seeing out of him. His patience at the plate has gotten a little bit better. He's just really finding his pitches and taking it, really, to be cliche about it. I think he's learning his approach to the plate and where he stands in the lineup, that if he does damage, he has the potential to score two or three runs, depending on who's on base. And, you know, with that, I mean, he primarily bats sixth, and he's hitting .382 right there right now. But it doesn't matter what the scenario is, with runners on base, runners not on base, he's hitting well about .300. So I really think he's taking a more, I guess, conservative approach to the plate. He's not really going after pitches that he knows he's not going to swing at. And I just think that he knows if he has the potential to get on base, whether it be a hit or a walk, which he hasn't been walked a whole heck of a lot, only 8 times this season, he knows he can steal bases. I mean, everybody knows that, and he's a huge threat to that. So really what I've seen out of him really has been his approach at the plate has been not a whole heck of a lot different, but he is a little bit more patient than he used to be.
Yeah, I mean he's definitely... It's interesting because he's swinging at, you know, more pitches inside the strike zone. I mean, so he's definitely seeing the ball a lot better than he was. You know, I mean, these last 2 years, his Z swing percentage, which is the time percentage of the time he swings at balls in the strike zone, is right around 76.2, 76.4 the last 2 years, and it was never before 70, you know, in any season previous to that. So it seems like the big difference, and that's really the only big difference I can see, is that all of a sudden he's being able to see that ball in the strike zone. Maybe part of it is that pitchers weren't really believing that he had that power and they were throwing him more strikes, and I could believe that in a 1-year sample, but to see that now 2 years in a row, I mean, especially with what he's done in the early going here, you know, I can't imagine that there's any pitcher out there who was thinking, oh, Carlos Gomez, I'll just throw meatballs down the middle and let him get himself out. You know, so it definitely has made some type of adjustment in seeing the pitches. So I think you're exactly 100% right there. There's some type of change that he made. I don't know if it was working with the pitching coach or the hitting coach or some type of thing that he did that there's a drastic change in what he's doing at the plate. But he just, I mean, he has become the star that the Twins were hoping they were getting from the Mets when they traded Johan Santana.
Yeah, and the biggest thing about Gomez, really his pitch recognition, pitches per plate appearance, last year it was 3.39. This year it's 3.94. So, I mean, you combine that with really his isolated power, which was 202 last year, and it's 221 currently. And obviously those numbers are going to change throughout the season because it's still only May and there's a lot of baseball to be played still. But clearly, the fact that his isolated power is going up with his amount of pitches taken at the plate shows you that, hey, he's just not hitting the ball out of the park, but he's getting doubles, he's getting triples, he's just seeing the ball, you know, better than he has been his entire career. So hopefully he can keep that up. Realistically, I don't know if he can, but you'd always ideally hope that he could. You know, Carlos Gomez really is somebody that the Brewers, I don't know, had huge expectations for, but he's somebody that is really getting the job done in the outfield. I mean, he's solid out there with Braun and Aoki.
Yeah, I mean, I got to give it to you. The Brewers got a guy, and Carlos Gomez for J.J. Hardy will go down in history as one of the dumbest things the Twins ever did, not because I think that trade was necessarily terrible, but because I think Twins then gave up on Hardy because he had a couple of injuries, and then they thought all of a sudden that Tsuyoshi Nishioka was going to be the next great Japanese import, and he turned to be probably the stinkiest thing since Limburger cheese.
I actually remember going to an Indians game because I live about an hour away from Cleveland. Oh, when the Twins.
That's too bad for you.
I know. When the Twins came in, and I remember it was a Pavano versus Masterson start, which I was really excited about. And I remember Nishioka started at short, and just, I think he had two errors that night. He just looked really lost in the field. I think he struck out twice. It just, I always was reading about him before he came over here, and people were really like, oh, he's going to be so good, and he just never really amounted to anything. And it's kind of a shame, but at the same regards, I mean, Japanese baseball is a little bit more different than American baseball, and not everybody can adjust. I mean, obviously, there are, you know, different examples of that, like Ichiro and Hideki Matsui, and even Kawasaki from the Blue Jays has done really well. But unfortunately for the Twins, Nishioka never really fit into that mold.
Yeah, no, and I think for me the biggest thing, you know, Nishioka was one of the last Japanese ball players that came over before the Japanese baseball made a switch with the type of ball they were using. And so I think it was 2010, they were still using a lot significantly smaller, lighter ball, I want to say. And then starting in 2011 and going forward, they're using a ball that's a lot more similar to the ball that they use in the minor and major leagues here in the United States. And so maybe the stats that you're seeing more recently are a lot more reliable. They're a lot, you know, you can take them more for what they are as a kind of a quad A type of league because it's going to be a similar equipment on field. But, yeah, Nishioka had that one good year where he was a batting champ over there. But, you know, sometimes you just swing and miss, and then you pick yourself back up, you get yourself a Pedro Florimon, and you move forward.
And I've got to ask, really, about the Twins. What the heck's up with, you know, really them offensively? You have Maurer who's doing well, you have Moreno who's doing well, and then after that it just kind of drops off, like, incredibly. I mean, you have Carroll, Jamie Carroll, who he was hitting 279, but he seems to not really play that much anymore. So, I mean, really, what's going on with the Twins offensively?
Well, the Twins are basically the Joe Mauer Show and friends. Justin Morneau has been hot in May, but he did not necessarily start the year off great in April. So he's coming around. Josh Willingham was just dreadful in the early going. He's still hitting just 205, but he's coming on hot lately. He's hit a couple of home runs. Trevor Plouffe maybe is showing that he's not the guy that can hit a bunch of home runs that he was for a brief period last year. Maybe he's just a slightly above average right-handed hitter that can hit pull a couple of balls, but he's dreadful against left-handed hitting. Brian Dozier has basically shown that he can't handle hitting at the major league level. Pedro Florimon, the shortstop, has settled in nicely as the glove first type of shortstop, but you know, he's never going to be a guy that's going to hit the ball well. Aaron Hicks started off the year dreadfully, basically in center field. The Twins had no other options, and so he won the opening day job. He's actually been playing very well lately, so maybe he's starting to make some of those adjustments. I think he's not definitely going to be a guy that's, you know, hitting less than 100 like he was at the beginning of the year, all year. His batting average is up to 157. He's been playing real good ball, making adjustments lately. Chris Parmalee is, as a right fielder, is just so confusing. I mean, the guy's 25 years old, so he's not necessarily a prospect, not necessarily a guy that you're hoping gets a lot better. But 2 years ago, he had himself a fantastic September, really put himself on the map in Twins territory, and then the last two years here, a year and a half, he hasn't really done anything at the major league level, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that's in danger of losing playing time, potentially a spot on the 25-man roster, especially with guys like Oswaldo Arcia and Chris Colabello, who are coming up and really able to hit the ball well. You mentioned Jamie Carroll, and I think the only reason Jamie Carroll is getting playing time right now is because Brian Dozier is so bad. Carroll has a contract multiplier, a contract incentive deal where if he gets 450 plate appearances this year, then he's locked into a team option in 2014 for $2 million. And if he doesn't hit that option, it's just a $250,000 buyout. And I don't think the Twins are interested in having a 40-year-old Jamie Carroll as a part of their team next year or paying him $2 million. So I think they're going to do everything in their power to get someone else in there so that Carroll doesn't get to 450 plate appearances.
Well,
I guess that was a really long answer to say that, the offense is just, it's been bad. I mean, I talked earlier, I said that of the Brewers regulars, they had five players with an OPS plus of 130 or better. The Twins have one player with an OPS plus of 130 or better. That's Joel Mauer. And they have the added benefit of having the DH, so that's one extra player, one extra offensive player as a regular. I mean, there's just not a lot of good stuff there. And with Brian Dozier and Aaron Hicks both being terrible, it's really tough to know what's going on.
You know, and that actually leads me into sort of the next segment is our questions that we have. And the one you actually asked, you said the Twins have lost about 100 games in a row and they're still better off than the Brewers. How is that possible? Well, pitching is a huge thing. And I don't necessarily want to say this about any particular division in general, but I think with teams like St. Louis, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati, the NL Central is a little bit more aggressive than the AL Central that has Cleveland, who just, they're hot and cold, and then Detroit, who really just runs the division. I guess you factor in divisions and you factor in individual weaknesses, and I guess the biggest thing we talked about really was the Brewers pitching, how awful it's been, and just how good St. Louis, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati have been, really. I mean, you factor in so many things, and I think part of it is other teams. So, but Cleveland, though, is just, I mean, they were killing Boston tonight, and they have been off to one great start. Obviously, the additions for them, Nick Swisher, Mark Reynolds, Michael Bourne, and even Drew Stubbs in that trade when they traded Chu, and they got Trevor Bauer as well. I mean, Cleveland is doing a lot of things right. Detroit, you know, they've got one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. So I think that definitely factors in at all. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, that's Cleveland is just playing off of their rockers right now. I mean, I don't know what's going on in Cleveland because I don't think they're that good. I mean, I didn't expect their pitching to be this good. I don't think Scott Kazmir can keep it up. They got Ubaldo all of a sudden has been able to put together some quality starts and not be terrible. I mean, I don't think he's ever again going to be the pitcher that the Rockies had 3 years ago, but if he can be an average major league starter, he definitely gives them some depth. Trevor Bauer won't be terrible, and he's actually been able to give them some semi-decent outings this year, but they need to be able to bring Bauer up and keep him there if they're going to have any chance at holding off the Tigers. I mean, the Tigers are 25-19 right now, just a game behind the Indians, and I don't see the Tigers as a team that's really set up to go into any type of slump this year. Their starting pitching is so good, their offense is so good, that if the Tigers ever lose more than three games in a row, I mean, that's just a fluke. It just, I don't see a way that it can happen, and so the Indians will have to continue to play above their gourds to have any chance of winning this division. And the Royals, we've seen they're just 3-7 in their last 10. They're maybe sliding back in comfortably to that third place spot. And I don't know that they'll have a lot of competition with the Tigers and Indians for those top two spots. I just don't think they're good enough yet. That young talent that they have is really not turning out. The White Sox are getting old, and the Twins are just staying bad.
Yeah, you mentioned the White Sox, you know, really not just at a standstill. They haven't really done anything. I mean, they traded away Burley, who was a huge part of their rotation. They're hoping that, you know, that Chris Sale becomes the centerpiece for that team. And unfortunately, I think Chris Sale is going to end up blowing his arm out the way he pitches. I hate to say it like that, but you look at, like, slow motion or, like, pictures of when he actually pitches and the way his arm, it's just, a human arm should not bend that way. But there's a lot of problems with the White Sox. I mean, Adam Dunn either strikes out or he hits a home run. And even then, it's really rare. They've got
and he only hits home runs against the Twins.
They have a really old infield, an old outfield, just not a whole lot of things going right for the White Sox. And then, you know, the Royals, you mentioned, are the complete opposite of that and a much younger team. And they could have been a much younger team if they would have kept Will Myers, but they traded him for James Shields and Wade Davis to the Tampa Bay Rays. Wade and Shields really can't do it all. And Kansas City is another team that has absolutely disastrous pitching. Luke Hocovier never really came into what they wanted to. They traded away Joaquim Soria. So Kansas City is just kind of there. But, you know, you mentioned Detroit and Cleveland. Detroit, like you said, and I fully agree with you here, I don't really see them falling into any sort of slump. I mean, when you have a pitching rotation that has, you know, Verlander, Scherzer, and Doug Fister as your top three, you're going to go far. Then you
can... Well, Anibal Sanchez, you know, I mean, don't forget about him. I mean, he's a stud.
Yeah, I mean, they signed him for quite a long time. I think 6 years, 70-some million. Or I could be wrong on those figures. I know they signed him for at least 6 years. And then, I mean, even factor in their offense. I mean, you have Fielder, Cabrera, and then you have Victor Martinez back. You have Johnny Peralta in there. I mean, they just really have no wrongdoing in this Detroit team. And then Cleveland is a very mystery team because they always seem to do really well at the beginning and then just fall apart. Justin Masterson has been incredible for me. I mean, complete game shutout against the Yankees, seven shutout innings in the last game that he pitched. Cleveland's a team that I think with their additions they can go a little bit longer, but like most teams, it's the starting pitching that comes into it because Masterson can only do it for so long, and then you have to factor in how is Zach McAllister going to do? Is Jimenez going to even be close to a subpar guy? And is Bauer going to really be any sort of, you know, guy that makes an impact? And is Scott Kazmir going to continue what he's doing? And the answer for that, I think, is no. Like you said, I have to agree with you. I just don't think that Cleveland can sustain that, at least pitching-wise. But the Central is a very interesting division because you always see it really fluctuate really in the past years it was always between Detroit, White Sox, and the Twins. Now it's really just been Detroit-owned. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that factor into that, but then you also look at the NL Central. That's usually always been Cincinnati-dominated, and now in later years, St. Louis has really crept up. Milwaukee crept up. Pittsburgh has always made some sort of run, but ends up falling apart after the All-Star game. And the Cubs are just kind of the Cubs and haven't really gone anywhere. Which I honestly think is kind of surprising, considering they got Theo Epstein as their GM, and they just have not done anything, and considering how well Theo Epstein did in Boston.
They're building. I mean, it's not like Theo's been there for a long time. I mean, it's going to take some time, but I think this offseason, you know, when the Whites or the Cubs were signing pitchers, they were signing all the guys that I wanted the Twins to target. You know, Feldman ended up being a pretty good deal for them. Scott Baker is a guy I wanted the Twins to re-sign. He ended up going to the Cubs, and he's been injured this year, but I think he's a good guy that can come back. He was one of the guys I really liked with the Twins that had the ability to strike guys out. So I think the Cubs are making good moves. Locking up Rizzo to that long-term deal is just fantastic. I mean, I think that's going to be a great, great contract for them going forward. So that team's on the rise. They're still going to be terrible now for a year or two. And then the other thing I think that maybe hurts those NL Central teams is the loss of the terrible Houston Astros.
Yes, and now they are thoroughly getting destroyed in the AL West, which really isn't any fun for them at all.
They're going to get destroyed anywhere where they're at right now, so it can't be fun for just to be with the Astros right now, but they have a bright, bright future.
You know, and that leads us into more questions. And Lou had so many questions for us, and three of them were really, you know, how come Carlos Gomez is a better Brewer than he was a Twin? And I think we kind of talked about that. Why was J.J. Hardy a better Brewer than a Twin? Why was Paul Molitor a better Brewer than a Twin?
Listen up, Lou, wherever you are. I'm tired of you. Why do you think that Paul Molitor was a better Brewer than a better Twin? Well, I don't know, because he played the prime of his career in Milwaukee, maybe. The Twins just got him twilighting. I don't know. J.J. Hardy had 1 year in Minnesota. I don't know. I mean, the Twins made a poor decision trading him to the Orioles for Jim Hoey. I mean, what is Jim Hoey? Who is Jim Hoey? I mean, what is going on? You know, I mean, we talked about that earlier. They were in love with Tsuyoshi Nishioka, and they let that get the best of them. So, you know, the Brewers have definitely bested the Twins historically. I think Lou and I have a long-standing bet here going on the Twins-Brewers season series coming up. And now that series is shrunk down to 4 games, will be a little bit less exciting. But I believe we're going double or nothing this year after the Twins and Brewers split a year ago. Come this time a week and a half from now, Lou is going to be owing me 2 cases of the finest Wisconsin beer from the Glarus.
The one question he had was how long before the Twins and Brewers combined to form the one giant media core team, the Millswoda Twires? I think that they might be at that point already. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make a pretty decent offensive team, because you swap out Lucroy for Maurer and swap out Morneau to first base there. Neither team has anyone in the middle infield at second base. You know, maybe Jamie Carroll is the best option at second base, but then Segura at shortstop and the Brew Crew the rest of the way around, maybe. Willingham as a right-handed power bat on the bench. You know, I mean, I think you can make a pretty good offensive team. The problem is that between the two teams, you probably still don't have anything better than an average MLB pitching staff. Yeah. It would be tough to win more than 85 games, even if you pooled the talent.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, a lot that would be wrong. I mean, obviously, in the bullpen for the Twins, you have Ryan Pressly and Jared Burton, who have done well. But the problem really isn't the bullpen with either team. It's more or less the starting pitching, and that's something that you can't really, like you said, get from either team.
Yeah, what else you got? Give me some more Twitter questions.
Fire it up. Lou actually had another one, which...
Sweet. You know, I talked to Lou on email earlier this week. We've been blogger buddies for the better part 3 years now. And Lou has requested to only be referred to as Sweet Lou. He said, only call me Sweet Lou or else. So you should take that with you to future Reviewing the Brew podcasts. Even, I know you're the editor over there, maybe you can change his signature line on all of his posts that just say Sweet Lou.
I might have to consider that.
Yeah, just make it happen for me. A slide of fiver your way.
Well, Sweet Lou actually has two questions that he put into one tweet. He says, who is the best Twins player? Which I think we all unanimously know it's Joe Mauer, but, I mean, maybe there's somebody like Batman hiding
in the shadows. Byron Buxton.
I thought it was Jamie Carroll.
Yeah, he's a leprechaun. I mean, he does have that skill, but...
And then he asked, would you take Ricky Weeks for a pair of his cleats?
A pair of Lou's cleats or a pair of Ricky Weeks' cleats?
I am assuming it's a pair of Ricky Weeks' cleats.
The Twins' middle infield has been so bad the last few years. I might be willing to trade for Ricky Weeks for a pair of his own shoes plus one slide down the Brewers' home run slide.
Well, I mean, if it works, it works. So,
I mean, is there a way where fans can access the Bernie Brewer home run slide? Is that an option for in-game activities? Like, you show up early for batting practice and you get to slide?
You know, I don't know that. I know we're having a get-together in beginning of July that we're all going to a few games. So, I might try to find that out for you.
Yeah, put it on the list of things to do. And if you find out it's possible, I'll be cruising over Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to find that out for you. Last question we have is from Justin Schultz, another staff writer at Reviewing the Brew. He, I'm assuming this one's for you, Eric. He said, were you surprised that the Twins sent down Worley?
I mean, I think surprised... In the grand scheme of things, I never expected Worley to be so bad where the Twins would need to exercise one of his options this year. But I think in a micro, you know, the micro side of it is he's just been so bad. And like I said earlier, the Twins have so many back of the rotation type starters that are available in Rochester that if they can use that option to send him down there for 3 or 4 weeks, allow him to maybe feast on some minor league pitching or hitting, get maybe he's got something going on with his mechanics or confidence or whatever it is, allow him to go down there and succeed and then bring him back up. You're not losing anything because this 2013 season was basically, you know, a lost cause to begin with. So if he can go down there and turn some things around, I think that's a bonus. But yeah, I think overall, I was surprised that they waived him because he was the opening day starter and now he's in AAA. So, I mean, you don't plan for that kind of thing to happen, especially without some type of injury or some major other concern, just general ineffectiveness. Yeah, definitely a shocker.
Yeah, and that's always something that it's hard to tell really that a guy's going down, and even though he's not doing great, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be designated for AAA. Because, I mean, I've heard so many people call for John Axford to be in AAA or off the team, and I just think that's absolutely ridiculous because, you know, we know he can rebound from that. And it's just, it's really surprising to see a guy like Worley, who the Twins went out and got and thought he was going to be what he was with the Phillies, you know, that good young arm in the rotation. I mean, I'm not obviously somebody who follows the Twins, but I think it's a little bit shocking just because the Twins really have no other options to go with.
Yeah, I mean, and it's tough to really know what's going on with Worley. He's not necessarily lost a lot of velocity. His release point seems to be fairly significantly different this year than it was a year ago. But some of that could just be, you know, park effects as far as the pitch effects cameras go. You know, changing from a lot of his games over in the Phillies park to here at Target Field. But, I mean, there's definitely something going on with him. Again, it could be that pitch effects camera. It could be that injury that he had on his elbow has just made a significant change in his mechanics. Maybe he doesn't have his confidence back. Something weird is going on. But I have faith the Twins will get him down there in AAA. He's a good young pitcher. He can come back and succeed for the Twins and be part of the team in 2014-15 and a valuable contributor.
Yeah, and talking about, you know, Brewers, Twins, you know, they do play each other for four games coming up, starting on Memorial Day. So Monday they play two in Milwaukee and then two in Minnesota. So in that first matchup, we're going to see Hiram Burgos, and the Minnesota Twins haven't announced who they're going to start yet in that game. But, you know, we'll have another matchup after that. We'll have Scott Diamond against Willie Peralta, then Sam Deduno against Marco Estrada, and then Kevin Correa against who the Brewers. I'm assuming you're going to put Kyle Loesch there. But how do you think this series is going to turn out, Eric? Do you think they're going to split it? Do you think it's going to be dominated by one team?
Yeah, you know, it's really tough to say because just a four game. I don't like that they went to just basically a two game home and home series for these border battles. I think, you know, even with the six game series, it was a lot more interesting because you had a couple three game series spread out there during interleague play. But, you know, it's so fickle because these teams are pretty evenly matched. The Brewers definitely have a lot more offense, and so if I had to lean one way, I'd lean towards the Brewers. But I'm not confident to say that for sure the Brewers are going to win three games. I mean, they've shown that they love to give games away in late innings. Part of that could be because they're so right-handed as a lineup that when it gets late in games, the opposing manager can just put in left-handers and kind of shut down that lineup and allow the other club to come back. But you know, the Twins don't necessarily have a lot of offense going for them right now, so I'm not confident that they can come back. And if they get down early and have to rely on their middle of the bullpen, they're not going to win a lot of games. So I think if I had to bet, I would just call for a split. But that's terribly unexciting, so I'll just lean homeward, and I'll say that the Twins win it three games to one. And I think that they take both games in Milwaukee and split in Target Field.
Now, I'm going to actually say the exact opposite of that. I think the Brewers, for as bad as their May has been, I mean, they've won, I believe, four games the entire month of May. And they definitely need some wins. You know, they're in a bit of a jam right now. They've just faced the Cardinals, faced the Dodgers. They go to play Pittsburgh again, then they play Minnesota. You know, there's definitely at some point where it has to break open for the Brewers and they have to win something. And I'm thinking with, obviously, Minnesota and Milwaukee have very similar pitching staffs starting-wise that have just not been great by any stretch of the imagination this season. But just because I'm a little bit biased with the Milwaukee Brewers, I have to think at some point they have to take advantage of a team that doesn't have that great of starting pitching and at least mash six or seven runs out of them. They have to at some point. I mean, it's just, you have to stop the bleeding somehow, and if it's by blowouts, then so be it. But there has to be some way Milwaukee has to turn it around, and I think they can do it against Minnesota, but in the same regards, you know, Minnesota's no slouch team either. You know, they're going to fight back just as much because in the grand scheme of things, these are two fairly even-matched teams. You know, at least this year they are. So it can go either way. A split might happen. It's possibly the thing that will happen. I certainly don't think one team's going to sweep the other. I don't think it's going to be a 4-0 sweep. But I definitely think a split's probably the thing that's going to happen the most.
Well, Benjamin, what else do you got for me? Is that it for this week on Reviewing the Brew?
Well, do you have any players of the week for the Twins? Pitcher and hitter of the week for you guys?
You know, we usually do a pitcher and hitter of the week on the Talk to Contact podcast, but co-host Cody usually takes care of that. But I would say maybe a player to watch for, especially with this upcoming series against Milwaukee, is watch out for Justin Morneau because he's playing hot right now. He's really been on fire. I think he's hitting almost 350 in the month of May. So he's really been a driving force in this lineup. And then pitching-wise, I'd watch out for Glenn Perkins because he really has been a guy who's been on his game here this year. He's really not blown any saves yet, and outside of one extra inning game, he's really been a shutdown guy. So those are two guys I'd watch for in this upcoming series with the Brewers.
That's always interesting because Glenn Perkins is somebody that I think is more thrusted into the role because they didn't really have anybody after Joe Nathan left. And really, Glenn Perkins has done a pretty decent job as the closer for the Twins. So, you know, I give him credit there for really being thrust into that role. You know, Morneau and Mauer are always two people we have to watch for, especially Morneau, like you said, who's really turned it on in May. Such a dangerous hitter, really, to face. And, you know, that's something the Brewers have to watch out for. If they make a mistake pitch to them, Morneau's going to take them yard easily. So, yeah, I definitely think, you know, those are two guys to definitely watch for. Because comparatively, the bullpens are pretty much the same, and Minnesota has a pretty decent bullpen. And you know, like you said, once they get to Glenn Perkins, that's somebody who can shut them down.
Well, especially because, like I said earlier, the Brewers are such a right-handed lineup. Glenn Perkins comes in, you know, maybe they have an opportunity to do some damage there against a left-hander. But Jared Burton has closed for the Twins before, and he's been pretty much lights out the last 2 years, so it'll be interesting to see what kind of matchups Ron Gardenhire plays when we get to the later innings in Milwaukee.
Well, regardless, it should be a fun series for Brewers and Twins fans alike, and hopefully, you know, whatever bets you and Lou made, hopefully don't get too wacky.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Lou's house and camp in his front yard until he pays up.
Well, that would be pretty interesting. Well, definitely have some stories about that to tell then if that actually happens.
Yeah, we'll Instagram it.
Well, Eric, thanks for being on the show this week. Love to have you back anytime. So,
especially well, Benjamin, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been a fun experience on my inaugural podcast with Reviewing the Brewer.
Yeah, and everybody who's listening, be sure to check out Talk to Contact, where you'll hear Eric, who was just talking with me, and his brother Paul, and you said Cody was his name?
Yep, Cody Christie, the Nodak Twins fan.
Yeah, so be sure to check them out. Be sure to check us out, still in Reviewing the Brew. And thank you all, and be sure to listen next week. Thank you.